Welcome back to the Boys and Bolos podcast. We're down here in the Rat Tail Bunker in Barbershop Studio on a special European Super League special. We're going to talk about it. We're going to get into it. We're going to ask all the pointed questions and answer all the scintillating topics. No, but seriously, we got to talk about it. Have a little chat.
Have a little chat. A fireside chat.
Lots has happened.
English.
English is my first language.
Your very first language.
My very first language.
Not your last language, but your first language. Are you working on Dothraki in your spare time?
Klingon, Dothraki.
Exactly. You got to get those up. Nothing looks better on a CV these days. That Doge knowledge.
Hey, you never know.
Anyway, back to the European Super League, which literally has made fans across the globe crap themselves.
Yeah, literally shit their pants.
Grown men crying everywhere. Grown women crying everywhere. It's insane.
The English did what they typically love to do when they are protesting something. They made signs. Lots and lots of signs.
Love signs.
They love their signs.
I think general protesters like signs, yeah. Not just the English. But you know what they do? This is just soccer fans worldwide. They like go out to print shops.
Yeah.
And Vistaprint is like hot on flames, and they all have these huge 18-foot banners.
Yeah,
that's
banners.
Intense.
It's banners, signs.
They're like soccer.
I think at
protest.
Ellen Road, they flew a plane with one of those like banners at the back behind it that said like "No Super League, No European Super League." So,
shit is real.
Shit's real.
So we wanted to just hop on this pod. We literally put up a timer. We're gonna talk for about 20 minutes, give or take, covering some topics, things, putting some ideas out there. And I think what really spurred this on, because this has been a conversation that has been in the works for better part of a decade, if not more. And so it's not too surprising that it finally went through. But one of the things we were just talking about before we started to record was its execution and rollout was super brutal. If they said this is what we're planning to do in 2024, 2025, that's one thing. But they're like, no, we're basically starting tomorrow. These are the new rules. This is how we're going to do it. And one of the things I was saying to you is like, whenever you roll out something, you can roll out a really bad idea, but if you roll it out well enough, you can get buy-in. But even if you have a great idea, like maybe the Super League for some people is a great idea, the way that it was basically put out was, we're going to get together. Everyone else, you can F off. Sorry. This is all about money.
Yeah.
And I think that there was probably a better way to sell it. And messaging and branding in the world we live in is so important to building community and making sure everyone feels like they're a part and empowered. Because basically, if you're a fan, and as you're a Tottenham fan, I'm a Chelsea fan, I don't even know what to feel. I'm just kind of like, I feel blindsided. Not that I ever felt like before I had any say in the club. I could get on Twitter 24 hours a day and bitch that Christian Pulisic wasn't playing and Ziyech was playing or whatever it was for Chelsea. Nothing is actually going to change. And I think this is really showing the corporatocracy that has become European football at the highest level. The clubs that are owned by foreigners, especially ever since they changed that when they created the Premier League and they allowed foreign investors, it's like when they cut out the Glass-Steagall Act from finance and then we had stock market crash of 2008 because basically the derivatives market was out of control. I'm not going to go too much into that, but once you take regulations off and you're deregulating, you're opening it up to funny money in a world where very small amounts of people have control. And so that's why as we talked about, we're not surprised that the German team said hell no due to the way their clubs are structured financially. But other teams like Tottenham with Levy, Chelsea with Abramovich, some of the other teams that are owned by the Fenway Group or they have basically conglomerates or whoever owns them, the fans don't really have much say. They're basically just along for the ride, and whatever the club wants to do, they're going to do. So that doesn't surprise me that it happened. What surprised me, as I said, is the execution. It's just like we woke up one day, and then up is down, down is up.
I mean, as a Tottenham fan, it's coupled with the Jose Mourinho sacking news, so it's a weird day for me. But I agree with you. I think for me, especially as a American Premier League fan, as an American Spurs fan, I am just kind of like sitting and waiting just to see what happens next. Because you're right, we have no say. They don't care about the fans. They don't care about the fans. Because if they did, then this shit wouldn't happen. They care about making money. And I've been saying this from day one. They've been doing that since the Premier League like formed, the top teams that make the most money and have the most revenue win and compete for the Premier League, go to the Champions League. So to like have this idea that like this like grandiose idea that suddenly like things are like football is equitable, football has been equitable. It hasn't been a thing for 20 years, 25 years, right? It hasn't been a thing.
Football has stopped being equitable for a long time. Probably early 2000s. If you think about football from a global standpoint, and we get away from the clubs, I think today we're highly focused on the clubs and what that looks like. But football on the global standpoint is essentially just Europe's always going to win. Brazil won in 2002. They won on a team where you'll never see again. They had four Ballon d'Or winners on one team. You will never, ever see that again. And that's the team that they needed to beat a bollockless Germany in 2002. Every year since, it's been dominated by European teams. And there's in the statistics, it's been proven that in the World Cup, if a European and non-European team plays, I think it's like 62% of the time a European team will win. Not even just tie. They'll straight up win, which in soccer is a very high rate over a long period of time. So statistically, soccer is becoming more and more of an unequal sport where South America honestly can't compete. And this is the thing we've talked about in this podcast. As a guy who has a Colombian passport, I know Colombia is never going to really be able to hang with some of the bigger European teams in an international tournament. It's a really unfortunate thing. So maybe a Brazil, maybe of Argentina. Argentina have kind of fallen from grace. They had a shit team that got to the 2014 final, to be fair. Lionel Messi literally carried them. But we saw what happened to Brazil in 2014. Brazil won the Copa America. We're kind of getting a little off track. The point is, soccer is no longer, and really was never, but I think we were sold that thing of goods. Like, yeah, there'll be five African teams, and there'll be five teams from South America, and this many teams from CONCACAF. We're going to get this many teams from Asia. When at the end of the day, we're all literally getting together just so we can watch a European team win. Hmm. If you go back and you look, so 2002, you had Brazil, final with Germany. And once again, they win 2-0, but Ballack didn't get to play. 2006, guess who the finalists are? They're France and Italy. 2010, guess who the finalists are? Spain and Holland. 2014, finally we had a little bit of parity, and it was good that Lionel Messi brought Argentina, but Germany won that game. I don't think anyone, you know, Germany won that game. 2018, you have a final between France and Croatia. Even a smaller European country is able to get to the peak of international soccer. So it's a really worrying thing, the direction of soccer, and the pandemic is knocking all of these South American teams, especially the Central American teams as well, and in CONCACAF, they're getting decimated. Brazil is getting decimated by the pandemic, the kings of soccer.
Yep.
So all this is to say, soccer has never been very on an equal playing field, and when people sit around and they complain, oh, but it's the grassroots, it's about the passion, I totally agree. If you're out with your mates, you're out with your friends, you're out with your amigos, and you're kicking the ball around, and you're at a barbecue, you're having fun, or you're even playing a Sunday league, an over 30 Sunday league, wherever you are in the world, that's fun. Go out, have a good time. But at the highest level, it has turned into a strict business.
Yep.
And that's
so it's
it.
It's a corporate entity. Just like an NFL, just like an NBA, just like anything. And so they want guaranteed revenue. They want guaranteed admission into the best tournament. And they want to share all that revenue amongst all the teams. And they feel like the compromise that they're making is they're allowing five teams get in based on merit. So there'll be 15 teams that automatically get in every year, and then five additional teams. Now, I think when you really step back and you look at what the Champions League is and what this is, it's not entirely different. It's just that you're sold this grandiose idea that any team can make it in the Champions League. Any team can rise up the ranks of English football pyramid and get to the highest level. Come the fuck on. Are you get your head out of your ass? Like, that is not happening. That's not happening. Okay, maybe once in a while, a Leicester who got bought by a Thai businessman, huge bit like
Malaysia, Thai, yeah.
King Power, whatever it is, that team. It was in the Champions League. Then they went back. Then they weren't in the Champions League, right? So it's always going to be the four teams, the top four. It's going to be Man City. It's going to be Man United. It's going to be Liverpool and Chelsea, and then maybe Tottenham, and then maybe Arsenal. Really, that's it. That's it. I mean, that's it. I mean, let's be real. It's not changing the landscape of football that much. That's my big take on it. And like, it's literally just squabbling between billionaire entities right now. It's UEFA earns billions of dollars a year, doesn't share it all with the clubs, and they want a bigger cut of the pie. So they said, okay, well, we'll just make another tournament, and we'll sell the TV rights, and you know, we'll sell it to a BN Sports or whoever. Bottom line is I guarantee you, Neville and Carragher would be told to just keep their mouths shut if Sky got the TV rights to the European Super Cup. So, and it's a little disingenuous for Neville to get a former United player who bought a lower level club with a bunch of his pals from United to bring up the English Football Ladder with money. So keep your mouth shut about the grit, like the how this is such a disgrace and it's such a. I don't want to hear it from that guy. I don't want to hear it from Carragher, who's a Liverpool player. I don't want to hear, even though they have good points, I don't want to hear it from them. It's not them that are. It's Sky is part of the problem.
I think Sky is a massive part of the problem. One of the things I think that this is unveiling, and I think this is why it's so uncomfortable, and I know we've already talked about this, so I'm going to repeat it again, but it's like the reason why I think this is jarring to the average supporter of the team, whether it's the EPL, Serie A, La Liga, whatever it is that in society we're told that if you work really hard, you can kind of get whatever you want. And the reality of it is that is the false sold goods that we are sold as a society in a capitalist system to make us feel like as long as we keep our head down and we work, we can get whatever we want. Right. That is literally part of the American dream, and it's really part of the dream throughout the world and the way the money works, the way the money flows. But everyone's like, we got to go back to the soccer pyramid. And all I can think of is the Office scene where Jim's like telling Michael that he joined an MLM and he drew the pyramid on the whiteboard. Because in the soccer pyramid, that's right, at the top, there's still a couple teams that are going to take all the revenue. And so you're really not changing much. Once again, I think it's the execution. And I think it would have been better if the Champions League had been fixed and added on, like, you know, if it had been updated and improved, rather than just going and creating its own thing. Because I think it really messes up that whole structure, and I like the way the European currently, the system currently works. But anyways, I'm going all over the place, but getting back to the merit, the second you take it away from, like, you know, the second tier team can get to the first league and then get to the championship and then get to the Premier League, it takes out the incentive to want to compete and to just want to get better. And, like, winning at the top doesn't really like afford you anything. You want to get to the Premier League, and then the dream is, can you stay in the Premier League? If you can stay in the Premier League, then can you get in top 10? If you can get in top 10, then can you get in top 6? Because that's Europa League. Then can you get in the Champions League? Then can you win? And without that, it does look more, and this is like a lot of the comments on the videos we've been putting up on TikTok and Instagram, it does look more like a U.S. structure where it doesn't matter how bad you perform because you still get to stay in the league. And that is definitely a change of how the relegation and promotion system works in Europe. And I know that, like you said, you're going to add in 5 teams, but it's also, like you said, the reality of it is there's only 5 or 6 teams that can win the Champions League every year. We're just waiting to see which team. And so not too much has changed, except now not having PSG or Bayern or Borussia definitely doesn't mean that it has the top clubs in the world if you're just looking especially at Europe. The top clubs in Europe, I shouldn't say in the world.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions just from a logistics standpoint. They're already, like, stretched pretty thin. They only can carry a 25-man squad. And so if they're playing, if in a perfect world, if they're playing their domestic league 30-odd games, let's say 35 games if you average it out between all the top leagues, you're playing in a cup competition. In English, you're playing basically in 2 cup competitions. Then you're playing in Champions League, and then you're playing in this Super League. I just don't understand how logistically, how players are going to manage that load, and if it's even possible. They say it is possible. There's whatever you can do a midweek, I guess, but there are already so many midweek games.
I don't see how you do it.
I just don't.
If you're
understand.
An English team and you have to play in the 4 competitions that you normally do, if you're in a top 4 team or top 6, I guess Europe, I don't see where you add it in. With the international breaks, you don't add it in. Teams are already over fatigued. So I think that, I just think in general, they should have a cup for the lower leagues, for the lower levels, and they already do. There are a couple cups that already exist. But I think the Papa John's Cup, that like you call it the Cowabunga Cup, I think that should just be for the championship and down.
Yeah.
Leave that. Have the teams in the Premier League focus on the league, an FA Cup, and then a European competition, whatever that looks like. And that should be it. And there should just be one European competition, but it should be expanded and just be done better. So it should be putting Europa and Champions League probably together. And I don't know how to do this. I'm not saying I know how to do this. I'm trying to find a happy medium where everyone will be happy, because I do actually think the Super League makes sense geopolitically. I mean, the whole idea of the European Union was, we're going to get all of our countries together because together we'll be stronger in our financial sense. We'll protect one another. We're not going to be worried about the volatility of this currency going up and that going down and this appreciating and that depreciating. So it actually makes sense. Hey, let's take all of the best teams from the countries and have them play in a tournament, which is what we have, which is the Champions League. And it's so great to watch. See a team from Portugal play a team from Romania, a team from France, we get the team play a team from Spain, and you get to see these contrasting styles. So I think that's beautiful. But having a league that's going to go supersede that and basically jump outside the UCL, I think is really, really bad. Because I don't think, I don't know. It just seems like, again, for me, it's all about the execution. I think if they had messaged this better and if they had brought in fans, it would have been better. But clearly, money talks. And at the end of the day, the billionaires wanted to protect themselves. And we talked, most of this is on the back of the pandemic. They used the void of the pandemic to be able to say, this is our excuse. We see we can't have fans in the stadiums, so we need to get a cash flow, because that's it. Like you were saying, like Wolves is decimated financially,
right?
Even though they're in the Premier League. Everyone thinks Premier League teams are all good and happy. They're not. A lot of them probably have very high overhead, and they really are waiting on those gate. Like they need that gate, probably the bottom 10 teams. And so now the top six teams, Arsenal, Tottenham, they're like, look, if we're not going to have fans in the stands, we need to create a reliable cash flow to be able to weather whatever could happen, another pandemic, climate change, something else, like whatever it is, the future is unknown and it's going more and more online. And I'm going to put out there that I do think in the future, in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see VR and AR packages being sold around the world for probably about $1,000 each. And what you're going to do is you're going to get a set of goggles, kind of like Facebook already has Oculus. There's a bunch of VR and AR goggles out. So you're going to go buy a package for about $1,000. And then I'll be able to choose where I want to be in the bridge, choose my ticket, and then I'll be able to go to the games without going to the games. Because right now, if I'm Chelsea and I'm like, all right, if we want to maximize money, how do we do this? If we ever come to a pandemic again, we still need to be able to be making money weekly, right? So what do? We say $1,000 if you want to sit, you know, in the shed end, right? And I put on my AR goggles. I get exclusive interviews with players. I get exclusive things. They can use blockchain to back all this. So it's hyper secure, hyper transparent, basically tokenize certain sections of the club. And then because I have that access, I get to see all the home games. So I get 18 games and I get to see interviews with players before the, you know, I get to see all, I get extreme access for $1,000, and it's unlimited. They can sell this. They could sell 100,000 tickets.
Right.
And so that, I think, is where the future of soccer is going. And this whole Super League is just the first step in going to a place where, and this is really bad, and I'm not happy about this because you and I probably dream about going over to England and seeing games. This is just the first step in saying, we don't actually even need to play games. As you were talking about earlier, we don't even need to play games at Stamford Bridge, because the Chelsea brand can go play in Miami against AC Milan. They've seen that you can fill that stadium, whatever stadium you want, around the world.
They don't care.
They don't care. The owners don't care. They're looking at profit.
Yeah.
They know they can say Chelsea's going to play in the Meadowlands against AC Milan, and it's going to be a very serious game, fully officiated, and they're going to jack up the tickets. They don't need to go to Stamford Bridge. They don't need to be in the San Siro. So that, to me, I think is the future. I don't agree with it. I think there's another way to do it, but that, to me, I think is the future, and we're on that step.
I think for some of the clubs, obviously not Man United, not Liverpool, but for Tottenham and for Arsenal, they're kind of on the edge of being a relevant Champions League club. They definitely have a very strong fan base. They definitely make a lot of money. So they had to make Levy had to make a choice. He had to say, look, do we want to be on the outside looking in of this whole thing, or do we sign up and be one of the founding clubs and guarantee us the $350 million that we get from the outset. I totally agree. I don't think it's, I think they could have done this a lot better, a lot with a little more tact. But I think from the club owner, from the man, from the owner's perspective, they've got a new stadium. They got debt to pay on that stadium. They still haven't put the naming rights in the stadium. They were thinking about selling, and then the Super League thing got more real, so then that didn't happen. But they're looking at it from a business perspective. So you really have to really put that hat on and really think of it that way. And everybody is just so butthurt. Everybody's taking it so personally, like they have been attacked personally about football, when for the last 25 years, football has eroded from that grassroots, like, backyard, this is my club, like, I own this. That's eroded. That's gone. That's gone. That's been gone. They don't care about you. Any English people listening to this podcast, you support Arsenal, you support Tottenham, you support Liverpool, they do not care about you. The owners do not care about you. The players care because they love, that's what gets them fired up in the stands. The managers care. The owners do not care. They care. They only care about the bottom line.
How much do you think, and this is a lot of the feedback, that the aggressive feedback that one will get on social media when they post a video, how much do you think this has been influenced by the United States? How much is the United States to blame? Because I asked that, obviously, you know, when you ask a question, you imply a certain amount of,
yeah,
you're implying things, but there's a lot more U.S. money and control in English soccer. And the way that this Super League is set up is essentially a hybrid of the promotion relegation, as far as a merit-based system, mixed with the way all of the United States system is set up as far as its professional sports, where you basically have all these companies, you know, the New England Patriots as a business, this team as a business, and they're all going to come together, realizing that they're stronger together when they pool their money and their resources to make a better product week in and week out off the field. How much do you think of it is influenced by the U.S.? How guilty should we be as guys who love the English Premier League have a podcast and that's our passport? When it comes to this, I'm not sure there is an answer. I just think it's a very interesting thing to ask.
I mean, the Fenway Group and Liverpool are, you know, obviously at the forefront of this. So obviously they have an influence in, and how to make money. I think how to be profitable, right? And so they've looked at Major League Baseball, and they've looked at, you know, obviously they know about the NFL. The NFL, these leagues make money they make a ton of money without fans. They don't need the fans. They got ad revenue. They got deals with stadium deals. They got lots of stuff going on. It's TV rights. That's where they're making their money, right? And so it has a huge influence. I think it's really, there's a whole, you could go down a huge rabbit hole about how players develop for certain leagues and how that influences the top league, like the top professional league. So I think there's a huge problem in the U.S. in the way that we develop our basketball players, how we develop our hockey players, not so much our hockey players, but more of our basketball players, our football players. We use our universities and our colleges as ways to develop. And maybe that's not the best way, because basically we're bribing our kid. We're giving kids free education to get them to play in like basically a development league, while in England, and they have lower professional leagues where they're still compensated and they're still developing, but you know they earn a wage and all that stuff. And so maybe the English way is better, but so it's hard to really compare the two, because it's vastly different the way that we treat our sports versus the way that sports have been introduced and kind of brought into culture, I guess in Europe and in the rest of the world. It's a much different kind of animal. I think that maybe people, especially people in England, I think feel like because our soccer is crap, because our football is crap here, that we don't get to have an opinion, we don't get to have a say, whatever American owner that tries to influence the game over there is wrong. I'm not saying it's right that what they're doing, but I think there is a lot of like elitism when it comes to football from a European perspective, from a British perspective, against American influence. And anything that we have an opinion on is crap. It doesn't matter. MLS is crap. That's, I think, an interesting take. Like, we're not allowed to, I'm not allowed to have an opinion about what's happening in the European Super League because I live in the United States. There are more Tottenham supporters outside of England than there are in England. So the whole argument against that is just, it's just crazy. It's like they don't own the club, but they feel like they do because they used to go to, they used to go to the stadium when they were a kid. They used to do.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Tottenham fan, your grandfather went to White Hart Lane, your father went to White Hart Lane, you go to White Hart Lane, now you're taking your kid. So I totally understand that. And I think this is the exchange of power that the English FA made when they created the Premier League. They made it a global product. And the second you do that, it's just globalization, that's all it is. The second you do that, it's great because now you're bringing in all this foreign talent, you're attracting all this foreign talent, but at the same time, you're also going to attract foreign investment and foreign money. And then you're going to start to lose maybe what was the club that your grandfather saw. Because I guarantee if you're a Tottenham fan and your grandfather was going to White Hart Lane seeing the play in the 70s or 80s, now when he, if he were to, you know, if he's still alive, go and see them play at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, it's just a completely different game. It's a completely different brand. Even going from Highbury to the Emirates, I think was shocking for a lot of Arsenal fans. I'm glad that Chelsea have been able to hang on to the bridge as long as they have. And, you know, my question had its roots in the tweet. I think I shared it with you. It said, you know, Ed Woodward joined J.P. Morgan in 1999. 2005, he advised the Glazers in their acquisition of Man United. And in 2021, J.P. Morgan financed the European Super League with Man United, the reported ringleaders, really the ones behind kind of pushing for it. So I do think that there is a certain level of hyper-capitalism. Banking obviously plays a huge part in this. And we're talking billions and billions and billions of dollars. It's about power and control. I do think the United States and our influence on the game, you could point some fingers. I don't like that at all because I don't think that this is right. I'd much rather just have the Champions League, but in a more improved fashion. And once again, I don't know what that is, but I think creating something where you don't have to qualify. And now let's talk about the potential villaining or villainization of the players. If you're not going to let players who play on these top 15 teams play in the World Cup, play in the Euro Cup, play in the Copa America, play even in the Champions League semifinals that are coming up, what are you doing? You can't punish. I mean, you can. I don't think you should punish the players for decisions that their owners made. These players are basically just contracted slaves.
Yeah.
They're literally, as LeBron James often says about basketball, he says, as a professional player, your best ability is your availability. And we're seeing that right now. So it would suck for me to not have Christian Pulisic as a Chelsea player and also as a U.S. men's national team player get to play in a semifinal of the Champions League because some owners had all these backdoor dealings that he got contracted into because he's a contracted Chelsea player.
Yeah, there's going to be there. I mean, there is a legal question that lawyers are going to definitely be examining in the next couple days, months, weeks, whatever it is. This isn't over. Like, it's not, there's a lot of posturing. There's a lot of.
You said it best. It's a bargaining chip.
It's a bargaining chip.
Jamie Carragher said, he's like, this isn't over. I hope people understand that. And I agree. You said it. It's just like basically everyone is just calling each other's bluffs and they're just like walking closer with a duel with like bigger and bigger guns until someone kind of just like, you know, they're playing chicken until someone like says, okay, this is what we're going to do. Because I think, like you said, what they want to do is just renegotiate some of the rights that are currently with the UEFA Champions League. UEFA gets way too much money comparatively to the clubs who are the ones that are bringing and giving all the risk. They're bringing their players into this weekly tournament that could get hurt, and then that will affect their overall performance and the club's bottom line. Because the higher you finish in your domestic league, the more money you make.
Yeah, I've seen numbers kicking around. Like UEFA makes about $4 billion. They only share $2 billion with the clubs. That's just a number thrown out there, you know. And obviously, they would love a bigger piece of that pie. And I think what they want is guaranteed money. It's not. They get money to get into the tournament, but they obviously want more money to get into the tournament, and then they want more as they progress into the tournament. I think that's basically what they want. They just want more money. That's what anybody wants, is more money. That's why everybody's posturing right now, because everybody feels like they're entitled to X amount of the chunk of pie, and they're not getting it, right? And so the revenue, I think, is somewhat not stagnant, but you know, with the pandemic, with all this uncertainty, I think they feel like they can create something better than the Champions League that can generate them more revenue. And if you're a business owner, you bought the club to make you more money. Especially if you're one of the newer, like if you're a city, the city owner, or if you're, you know, if you're Abramovich in at Chelsea, you bought it when the Premier League was just, you know, being formed basically, or it had been around for a couple of years. And, you know, obviously you saw an opportunity maybe that this was going to happen down the line. You could see it down the line. So this has been in the works for years. I think this, a decade. I think this
has been in the works since before the 2010 World Cup. That's when they started to whisper about this, because Arsene Wenger had some quote where he was like, you know, this is totally going to happen. It's just a matter of time before these clubs basically come together and create a too big to fail situation, which is what they're doing. And like you said, we're just waiting to see whoever's the first team, whoever's, you know, whoever's going to blink first. I think FIFA is really disingenuous for them to come down on any moral line or you can't do this. Not that maybe they shouldn't be the sheriffs in town, as they are the international governing body of this sport, but there's corruption in FIFA. There always has been. The whole thing with giving it to Russia, there was a lot of corruption behind that. The whole thing with giving it to Qatar, there's a lot of corruption behind that. We know that thousands of Nepalese and Bangladeshi workers have been brought in and died to build those stadiums. There's potentially corruption even in 2014. I mean, Brazil, as far as the corruption meter, and Russia are probably two of the highest city. Like, there's actually a corrupt, and I'm blanking on it, but there's a corruption like barometer. Just like, you know, every country has a GDP. There's a corruption barometer. And I mean, in Latin America, which is a region that, you know, professionals in corruption, Brazil is like the number one. And Russia's Russia, yeah. Right? It's basically a dictatorship run by Vladimir Putin.
You know, it's, for me, it's just, you're splitting hairs when it comes to who's right and who's wrong, because it's just two giant corporations posturing one another. And the only, and to have this idea in your mind that it's UEFA is taking the moral high road and like you should side with UEFA. No, they don't care about you. They don't care about them. They don't care about the fans. They care about money.
You know, the thing about the UEFA too is they're not really beholden to anyone.
They're not.
You know, like if there's problems, like for example, there were people outside Anfield with the banners and everything. Like you can go there, but like who's going to UEFA headquarters and who would you even yell at? These people are like backdoor suits. You know what I mean? Like yeah. No one really knows. They like move under the shadow of night, and like it's really hard to hold those things accountable. Like it's really hard to hold FIFA accountable. I don't think anyone's happy about the 2022 World Cup. It's going to cut right in the middle of all domestic seasons for Europe, and it's just super poorly thought out. They shouldn't ever be doing it in countries that don't have any soccer culture. That's just my take. I know that it's got to be a global sport and we've got to expand it to all corners of the earth, but I just truly don't believe that. Like, you're not going to put a World Cup in Puerto Rico, so why are you putting a World Cup in Qatar? Oh, that's right, because they have a shit ton of money and there was backroom deals.
Yeah.
It's like the exact same analogy. Like, Puerto Rico's play baseball and basketball, kind of into soccer, but it's like the same thing. Like, I know Qatar, they're trying to play more soccer or whatever, but like to have to go to a place and build 8 stadiums.
Yeah, no.
All of the majority of the corruption in the world goes into drugs and construction, because they're the easiest things to be able to hide in funny with budgets, especially like public construction. So Qatar's a disaster. I don't think FIFA should come down. I don't think UEFA should come down. But I guess that they're the ones to do it. I don't know. I am vehemently against the ESL as it is right now. I think what it should be is an improvement on the Champions League. That's what I'm for. Because you can't just scrap everything. I think there has to be like a smooth transition into the ESL. If you're like in 2026, we're going to go towards the ESL. And the teams over between now and then that pick up the most points in Europe will qualify. In order to pick up points, you need to win games in Europe. Each win is literally 3 points. Each tie is literally a point. You just do that and you just have a tally that's very transparent. And that way teams know over the next 4 to 5 seasons, they have to accumulate points so that way they can get in. So it's merit-based, even though, as we know, the teams with money will be the ones that go. If you did that and you look at these 15 teams and then looked at the same teams from Italy, Spain, and England, it would almost be the same teams.
It would be. It would absolutely be.
It would be almost be the same teams to a T.
I just keep telling people, I say, yes, fine. It's a bad idea in as a product and how it's being executed. But look at the Champions League. Look what it is every year. And they say, yeah, but the Everton. Yeah, but Leicester. Look, they can get. Look at who's in the Champions League every year. It's the same whatever number of teams. And just like a rotating group of 10 teams. Because it starts out as a bigger tournament. But
the only teams that have won the Champions League in the last 10 years that are not in this is just Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it. That's Real Madrid. It.
Because Inter Milan won in 2010. They're in this. 2011, Barcelona in it. Chelsea, 2012, yep, in it. Bayern, not in it, like we just called out. 2014, Real Madrid in it. 2015, Barcelona in it. 2016, 17, and 18, Real Madrid. Madrid. 2019,
Liverpool. Liverpool.
Liverpool. 2020, Bayern Munich. So nothing really changes, and I don't think that that's what people understand when they really, if they were to really sit back and even go with what I said. Okay, we're going to go into the ESL in 5 years because that's the natural progression of European elite soccer, is to have an interweek season where you basically play your domestic league and that's it. You wouldn't even compete in the FA Cup or domestic cup, whatever. And if you get a win, you get 3 points. If you get a tie, you get 1 point. And we're going to tally those up over the next 5 years. Literally, it would be the same teams. You might argue that maybe Napoli's in from Italy. Maybe Sevilla's in from Spain.
Yeah.
Maybe Leicester's in because they're going to qualify for the Champions League. But, like, you're splitting hairs. And then maybe those teams qualify anyways from the five.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's different. Once again, it's the execution and it's the back door and then coming out and being like, you know, because it's like, kids don't want to hear from their parents unless they understand. Good parenting is making your kid understand. So, like, when the parents come out and they're like, now these are the rules of the game, everyone's going to be bullshit. And that's where we are today.
Also, I think a lot of people are upset because they think it's going to ruin the English pyramid, the English football pyramid, because if the six teams aren't in the Premier League anymore, which is what the conversation has devolved into.
Which I don't even understand how that works. No one's going to watch, like, yes, people are still going to watch the Premier League, but what the fuck?
So they get kicked out of the Premier League, and then there's no money, and then the money doesn't trickle down to the other clubs, right? And so it hurts that whole product.
And that is one part of it I don't like, because I think that Chelsea, Tottenham, Arsenal, Man United, Man City have to realize that a rising tide lifts all boats, and they're only as good as the financial security of the team that's about to be relegated. Right. Like, Man City is only in the position of Man City because literally Sheffield exists. That's it. That's the way the whole thing works.
Also, I think it's a really, I think having the football pyramid and having the lower professional leagues is a great way to develop your youth players and your academy players. So you can go put an Oliver Skip out on loan. You can put a,
you know, Chelsea can take Loftus-Cheek and throw him on Fulham for a year. Yeah. So he still is an asset that is ideally appreciating, right, but he's not completely lost, and we don't have to send him away to, I don't know, play in Ukraine or something. So, yeah. Anyways, I think we've talked about this.
We've talked about it a lot. I don't want to go into any further. I think we both agree that we don't want it to exist as a tournament. We think the execution of it was poor, but we understand that the writing has been on the wall for this thing to happen for a very long time, and for everybody to be so surprised, to get so upset, is basically has been basically keeping their head in the sand for the last 20 years and not understanding really what's been happening in the world.
Yeah, if we go through the Premier League, like we just went the last decade of the Champions League, if we go through the Premier League, who's won the Premier League? Other than Leicester City, which was bought by a foreign investor and cash was injected into it.
Yep.
It's all been won by big money. Like, Blackburn isn't going to win the Premier League again, right? Nottingham Forest isn't going to win the European Cup again. When Nottingham Forest won the European Cup, managers are smoking on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Like, are you shitting me?
It's never going to happen again.
The game has changed.
We're still here. We'll keep covering it. I don't know what's going to happen in the next couple days. It's wild.
That's it. Let's just see what happens.
I mean, Chelsea and City and Real Madrid could get kicked out of the Champions League.
Yeah, PSG may finally get their...
As early as Friday.
Dude, watch PSG win the Champions League by default, and then they're like, okay, now we want to win. Now we want to join.
Yeah.
We've got the big...
We're one of the other trophy. Three unnamed teams.
Exactly. Oh, God. Anyways, ciao.
Ciao. Thanks for listening to the Boys and Bolos podcast. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Patreon, Twitch, at Boys and Bolos.
If you'd like to be a guest, please reach out. You can hit us on any of the social media accounts that Jeff just mentioned, or email us directly at boysandbolos@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening, and see you next time.